Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. But before we get started, I'd like to thank our sponsor, OnPay. Please support them so we can continue to share these important stories. Today on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Mark Buffington. He is with BIP Capital. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get too far into things, tell us about BIP Capital. How are you serving folks?
Well, we're over the last, almost two decades, we've become the most active venture capitalist in the region. We serve really two groups of people, investors who are looking to make outsized returns and entrepreneurs who are looking for capital and know-how in scaling their businesses. So that's how we do it.
Well, how would a firm like yours or any kind of VC firm help kind of their clients or their partners during this COVID time and with this transition of working from home, now returning to the office? Like, how does your company kind of help them, find the best practices, the best ways to kind of continue business despite the crisis?
Yeah, well, it turns out, I don't know if this is the same thing for you, Lee, but it turns out that I'm like 50% busier than I was, post pandemic than pre pandemic. So I don't know if it's because Zoom makes us more accessible, but, or just the demands of what's going on in the world, require us to be more active with our portfolio companies, but, we're helping them in all sorts of ways. From the most simple of things, like, just allowing them to model our return to office policies and how we're handling that, all the way towards developing strategies to take advantage of the crisis or our competitors in the time of crisis, or on the flip side of that, how they can survive and stay alive, during these tough times. So we are really, really busy with our portfolio companies, and I could go into much deeper specifics if you were interested, but that's the basic idea.
Well, what happened at the time when there was a realization like, okay, this is really happening. This isn't something out only in China. This is going to come here and this is going to impact us. How did your team kind of come up with a plan that's saying, okay, we need to come up with certain things that are going to help all of our portfolio companies be able to adapt and to kind of iterate quickly in under this crisis terms?
Yeah, I think two things. I mean, so having done this now for two decades, we've been through a number of other crises, the Great Recession, the dot-com bust, kind of the accounting scandals at the beginning part of the millennium. So we had seen it before. And I think, we had a set of rules that we kind of operate off of during crises that served us very well. So, one thing is you have to make decisions quickly. You have to rally quickly. This idea of hoping for better times or that things will turn around quickly is not necessarily a good one when you're building venture capital companies and you're burning cash. But, our estimated burn is somewhat reliant on revenue. And so when you see, the market or customers having a tough time, they tend to cancel orders or delay purchases and all of that. So it shifts our forecasts and we have to, be really prudent and, usually means ramp down burn fairly significantly. So we did that, immediately. I think the other part of that was, in a weird way, got kind of lucky. My family and I were some of the early people affected in late February by the virus. And so we knew the severity and figured it was more than just, what had been like a SARS or an H1N1 type scare in the past, that this would be different. So we started preparing a few weeks earlier than maybe kind of mid-March. And I think that really helped us set the tone with our portfolio companies and the leaders of those companies. So, but we went all the way to a comprehensive review of the strategy, P&Ls, forecasts, cash needs, et cetera, of all 40 plus portfolio companies we had, and really within a month had shored up their balance sheets to give them almost all of them at least 2 years worth of cash runway if they needed it. So, you know, been highly active during this period of time, and it's all about living to fight another day.
So now on one hand, you're helping your portfolio company survive and weather the storm. But on the other hand, this must open up some opportunities where some other maybe great ideas, but don't have the financial resources, become available. Are you seeing some of that come into play right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, we have a little over 40 companies. So when the pandemic struck and it became obvious that we were really in a crisis, we assessed both short and long-term impact, at least what we thought that would be at the time of the pandemic. And we assessed that, you know, 9 of our companies would be immediately and directly impacted by the pandemic. And the others really would be indirectly impacted by the pandemic. And so we, at least in the short term. And then we thought that, you know, roughly about 25% or a quarter of them would probably have an opportunity to improve their competitive positioning as a result of the pandemic, either because we felt like our competition was weaker and they would be eliminated, or we had some kind of advantage that we could exploit to really improve our market position. As it's turned out, now that we're 3 months into the pandemic, I think we were able to shore up, not to be boastful in any way, but all of the companies that I was worried about, you know, all 9 of those that I was worried about, as being short-term directly impacted by the pandemic. And then, you know, I think the 25% estimate of, you know, hey, long-term, the COVID or the pandemic is going to help us, you know, improve our competitive positioning. I think we were probably underestimated that. And I think probably closer to a third of our companies are now, you know, emerging from this, you know, assuming that we're starting to turn this around. And I think that's a big assumption, but we're really emerging from this in a better competitive position. So, you know, all things equal, you know, nobody likes to go through a pandemic or what we've been through, but I think from a competitive standpoint, we're probably in a better position. That said, we had to weather the short-term impacts of the pandemic.
Now, your firm does some work where you do like state of the kind of startup community, I guess, it's almost nationwide now, right? I know it's in the Southeast or in this Southern region, but I guess it's expanding beyond that. Are you seeing, like, what are you seeing out there in the other markets outside of Atlanta?
I don't think our region is any different. The startup world is, you know, at least in regards to dealing with crises and what happens to companies that are burning cash, you know, when they encounter a, you know, kind of a macroeconomic crisis, you know, I don't think there's not a different set of laws, macroeconomic laws here than there are there. So I see, you know, a lot of pain. I think companies that, you know, incidentally, the companies that were the highest flying, that were doing the best, you know, and therefore started burning more capital to capture larger markets, I think they've had the toughest time, if you ask me. You know, other than the companies that were just, you know, doomed to fail before the pandemic anyway. But I think really the highest flying companies have had the toughest time because as the, you know, we threw the brakes on the economy and purchasing and the like, they've had the toughest time adjusting quickly. And we're no different in that. We've had, you know, imagine trying to convince a 30-year-old founder who was king of the world, you know, and kind of early February that, hey, we've got to stop burning and spending so much money and going after this market as aggressively as we were. That's not a decision that's easily made. And there's a lot of ego and other things involved in that. So that's a lot of work to get them to shift their focus and, you know, maybe fly not so close to the sun. And so I see that, you know, across the country is, you know, that valuations have come in, expectations have come in. I think those companies that are able to maneuver through that faster are the companies that will emerge, you know, in good health. Otherwise, they're taking on, you know, a lot of risk. And so as I talk to my peers and colleagues around the country, they're, you know, we basically have the same set of challenges. You know, how do you deal with your high flying companies? How do you make sure you don't run out of money? How do you still spend money on product you know, improving products, but not break the bank while doing it? How do you emerge from this, you know, in a better competitive position from a product standpoint, from a go-to-market strategy standpoint, all of that. I mean, those are the basic discussions that I have with peers all around the country.
Now, sometimes when there's a crisis, it kind of reveals some people that maybe shouldn't be playing at this level that they were playing at because of the market kind of elevates a lot of folks. Are you seeing that? Is there some shakeup out in the VC world? Are you seeing some consolidation in any way?
For sure. That's kind of what I was referring to in the last answer to your question is that, you know, those companies that, you know, are hemorrhaging money that haven't been able to, you know, kind of shift into a different gear and downgrade, you know, are finding that the capital markets dry up a little bit, not entirely, and they're starting to come back, but they dry up. Access to capital at the same attractive valuations is not what it was, even for the best companies. And so, you know, if you maneuver, you know, along that path in the wrong way, it can put the company, any company, in harm's way. And, you know, I think that's, you know, we're certainly seeing that. I think the second effect that you kind of alluded to there was consolidation opportunities. And so one of the many strategies that we, you know, discussed and are trying to implement as a result of the pandemic is if we're in a space and we're, you know, either the kind of leader or, you know, one of the two leaders in a given space. But we have other, you know, smaller competitors in that particular space or vertical, you know, rolling those up at attractive prices, you know, not just to eliminate competition, but to capture synergy and, you know, greater margins and operating and revenue synergy is, and even product synergy is, you know, a big part of our strategy as a result of the pandemic. So we're in the middle of, I believe, four or five, you know, kind of mergers or M&A processes with our existing portfolio. And it's exactly the strategy you alluded to. So, you know, I think those people that are on their toes and are have a decent capital base are going to be able to take advantage of the economic crisis. And, you know, that's really what I said to all of our portfolio company leaders and founders at the outset of the pandemic was, look, you'll have every opportunity to panic. You're going to get knocked down. You got to get up and you got to keep fighting. You got to make tough decisions. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to be presented with opportunities that, you know, you never imagined you were going to see because of the pandemic. And, you know, some of our very best companies were built in the shadow of a crisis, either the, you know, Great Recession or some other, you know, vertical specific crisis. And, you know, if you're on your toes, great opportunity presents themselves in times like this. And I'm really proud of how our portfolio companies have responded during the pandemic.
Now, has it expanded your scope of what industries to go into or what kind of verticals? Are there now opportunities in areas that maybe wasn't a sweet spot for you in the past, but now you're kind of intrigued by them?
Well, just doing what I do for a living, always intrigued by other spaces. But I think if anything, the crisis gives us an opportunity to go deeper in the spaces we're already in, you know, because we would consolidate or buy a company that has an ancillary or synergistic or complementary product. I'd say I haven't really thought about it until you asked the question, but I would say we're probably going deeper in the spaces and around the around the problems that we were endeavoring to solve with our portfolio companies. We're probably going deeper into solving those problems now post-pandemic than we were before. I can't think of a scenario where we've started looking at some space that we, you know, didn't have near as much experience in before. That said, we're getting opportunities to do that. I mean, the other thing that's kind of interesting is that when you enter into a crisis like this and capital dries up, you know, all of a sudden we're getting opportunities to invest all over the world and in all sorts of spaces and in things that we never look at. And, you know, it's interesting. I look at those plans and read them and think, you know, wow, that's super interesting. I'm just a simple example of that is I just saw a plan for out of a different region of the country that we don't get a lot of deal flow out of for essentially low cost rocket launching strategies. And so I thought that was kind of, I was like, how did these guys pick us to send this and ask if we would potentially invest in this? But I think that happens when capital dries up and people are, you know, really turning over every stone they possibly can to raise money. So certainly we're getting more looks, but, you know, we've stayed fairly disciplined and gone deeper into the spaces we know during this time.
Now, how do you help your portfolio companies kind of forecast ahead of this? Like, do you, what kind of assumptions are you making about what kind of the new normal or future normal is going to look like, you know, towards the end of the year going into next year?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, you know, obviously forecasting in a time like this becomes more difficult. And so, you know, just in general, what we see is that sales cycles extend, renewals, you know, the percentage of companies that, you know, are renewing goes down. And predicting the degree of that is, you know, gets difficult in a time like this. And so, you know, we run just as a part of our basic, you know, even in good times, it's just part of what we do with our portfolio companies. We always run a fairly standardized budgeting and forecasting process that allows us to say, okay, worst case scenario, you know, only 50% of our, you know, a given company's customers renew, or sales cycles extend by 3 months. Conversion rates, you know, are not as high as they were before. All of those things. So sales go down, renewals go down. You know, what does the world look like in that kind of, you know, kind of worst case scenario? And then we really build our budgets and cash flow forecasts off of that. And, you know, if we perform better, great. You know, that we'll have a longer runway and we won't have to raise as much capital. But it's just been my experience that, you know, plan for the worst and hope for the best, and good things happen. But it's really tough to, you know, think that the market will turn and to be, you know, planning on the absolute best case scenario. And I think that's when companies get in trouble, is, you know, when they think that, you know, that the very best things are going to happen and they capitalize on that basis. And then that doesn't happen. They've made themselves vulnerable, and, you know, capital markets can be tough and they'll take advantage of that situation if you're not prepared for it. So, but those are the basic ideas. And so we're, you know, we're really, you know, in our business models, looking at worst case scenarios and then capitalizing them, putting cash on the balance sheet on that basis.
Now, how do you advise the leader of a company to kind of make the most of this? Like, what should, you know, when knowing that, okay, things are going to be slow, I'm not going to be able to sell as much there, I have to conserve capital. What are some things I should be working on to really kind of not only just survive, but to thrive during this time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, again, when we called all of our portfolio companies together, we went through a, you know, essentially a strategic and competitive review. We call it a terrain analysis, but, you know, really looked at a deep look at all of our products, our competitors' products, and how we could take advantage of, you know, how each given company could take advantage of the situation and what we needed to focus on during this time. You know, in many cases, it opened up all sorts of, you know, avenues that, you know, frankly, were part of our thesis before the pandemic. I'll give you a great example of that in just a second, but they were part of our thesis before the pandemic, but then the pandemic and, you know, fear of the disease has accelerated some of the things we were working on, you know, prior to the pandemic hitting. So a great example of that is telemedicine. We just sold a telemedicine business actually this week that, you know, just saw just a tremendous explosion. You know, we really made, part of our thesis was, you know, that, that for, you know, a patient in a given location, let's say a rural location, to reach a specialist, it was really hard to drive 4 or 5 hours to a city. But if they could do that, you know, over, you know, a telemedicine, you know, platform, that there was a really good market opportunity there. You know, what we saw, as a result of that is, you know, that thesis ended up being right. And we were growing in a nice, you know, in a nice way prior to the pandemic. But post pandemic, it also, you know, that thesis was accelerated because people were scared to go into their doctor's offices. And so every doctor needed a telemedicine platform. And so we were the great beneficiary of that. You know, so when we saw that coming, we had to make tough choices on supply. We had to make tough choices on bandwidth and how we were selling, and did we actually invest into the crisis? So we did that there. Another example of that is we own a digital ticketing business. And, you know, for those, you know, there's only been a few sports events since the crisis has hit. But I can assure you that, you know, cash and other things where people are exchanging things or they're touching hands or, you know, all those types of things spread disease. And so what we're seeing is all the stadiums, you know, from pro level down to even little league, are moving to contactless ticketing. And so we had a play in that space and it's accelerated it greatly. So in the short run, as I mentioned earlier, you know, events got canceled and we didn't have anything to ticket. So, you know, revenue is going to go down. In the long run, we sold more of our, and we are selling more of our applications because we provide digital contactless ticketing. And so, you know, having the courage to invest into that, but living to survive another day is, you know, is part of the challenge. So there's, you know, I could probably name 15 examples like that where we were really positioned well for this, and it's accelerated the business opportunity, but, you know, we've taken kind of a nose punch in the short term, and we have to fight through that. But, you know, in a, from a long-term perspective, we're in a way better scenario than we were prior to the pandemic.
Now, let's talk a little bit about hiring and the acquisition of talent. How are you advising your clients, and how would you advise businesses to handle that when there is less face-to-face and a lot of this, I guess it might be hard to onboard a recent graduate or something like that. How are you advising them regarding talent?
Yeah, I mean, there's both challenges and opportunities. I think from a pure cost perspective, and anytime you see, you know, a recession or depression like this ensue, you know, people lose their jobs. There's more talent available. There's less pressure on wages. And so areas where it was nearly impossible to hire people, you know, prior to, you call it March 1st, data science, certain types of developers, software developers, et cetera. I mean, that's really softened up. So, you know, we've been able to bring in wholesale engineering teams to our portfolio that were either getting laid off somewhere. So they're teams that have worked together in the past. So that's created a, you know, a positive opportunity for us. I think to your point, though, you know, now that we're not all in an office together, even though I think for the most part, the world and us and our companies have adjusted very well to this kind of, you know, Zoom style world, you know, there's still something missing that needs to take place in an office, particularly around creative endeavors, or if you're building software or whiteboarding or solving problems. You know, I find that, you know, our companies are still trying to figure that out, particularly if they're onboarding a new employee. I think the other thing that's hard is, you know, ingraining or, you know, kind of engendering a new employee to a culture. You know, even in my own company, our team has done a great job of adjusting to just meeting by Zoom and talking by phone all the time. In fact, we're getting way more done. But long term, I'm a little worried about what it means for our culture, our fabric, you know, how we work together as a team. And so we're trying to figure that out. And I think that's true of our portfolio companies as well.
Now, you do that report, this kind of State of the Union of Startups. Are you working on any other report right now as an organization to kind of get the lay of the land or what you foresee in the, you know, dealing with COVID?
Yeah, maybe you got a heads up on all that. I don't know if maybe our PR team is working really well on that. But so we've got some really good stuff coming out. We've kind of extended the report you keep referring to is called SOSU, so State of Startups, and then we run it for various regions. The one we publish most often is the Southeast report. And so we've done a, you know, we've kind of for the last 3 years been focused on venture activity. So how many startups by state, what's happening in what sectors, how much money's going into those. Then we, you know, the follow-on version of that or the next chapter was, well, how are those dollars treated in terms of, you know, what do they buy in terms of ownership of the company? And so what did that mean for valuation? You know, this particular time we're now, this upcoming one, you know, I don't think the team will care if I foreshadow some of this, but that we're looking at where does real opportunity lie? And, you know, what we're finding is that deals with a lot of momentum, regardless of region, so including in the Southeast, you know, continue to drive greater returns. So the, you know, kind of the rich get richer is the idea. But interestingly enough, what we're also finding is that, you know, kind of two things. One is that there is a real opportunity. It's not something we do, but there's a real opportunity in vulture capitalism. So in other words, you know, companies that didn't work out, but built pretty good software, and then other people picking those up and then building them. It's really surprising if you look at all the data over the last 10 years, how many great companies have been built from picking up an asset that didn't quite work the first time. And so that was interesting and, you know, frankly surprising. We don't have a strategy to do that. In fact, we've always kind of been momentum growth investors or growth at a reasonable price investors. So we kind of run from those kind of turnaround situations. But as it turns out, you know, a lot of people are driving really nice returns doing that. And then the other thing you see is that certain regions really specialize in certain verticals. So in our own region, healthcare, IT, business to business is, you know, software tools, things like that. So, you know, BIP Capital, my company, has been a beneficiary of that because, you know, what we've seen is we've been in the right spaces for the region. But then if you go look at another region, the Midwest or the Mid-Atlantic or Northeast, they just specialize and tend to put off, build startups that are, you know, in different spaces that are good, but not necessarily in the spaces that are good in the Southeast per se. And so that's coming out. It'll be a more robust SOSU report in October. We've also looked at the quality. We've really gone and we're not indexing incubators, but we're looking at the quality of companies coming out of incubators. And that has been, you know, we'll publish something that doesn't, you know, doesn't demean or say anything bad about any of the incubators in town. But I think looking at what's coming out of not just incubators in Atlanta, but incubators in all of, you know, cities around the Southeast, Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, et cetera, is really interesting. And, you know, what you see is there's kind of a herding of success coming out of certain incubators. And it's certainly true in city by city. So that's a report, totally separate report that'll come out soon. And so anyway, that's a, you know, that's a little foreshadowing. I could go on, but our research team has been very active during this time.
Now, if somebody wants to get their hands on that upcoming report or any of your reports, what's the website for BIP?
It's www.bipcapital.com. And the menus will direct them to not just the current reports coming out in October. I think we've got another one coming out in August related to the incubator study. You know, so just follow the menus to get to those. But they can also see all of our historical reports as well.
Good stuff, Mark. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Yeah, always good to be with you, Lee.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see y'all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. And remember, we could not be sharing these stories without the support of our sponsor, OnPay. So please support them so we can continue telling these stories.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com.